Imagine logging into your company's network on just a random Tuesday morning.
Right, a completely average day.
Exactly. Everything looks totally normal, except you realize you actually can't open a single client file.
Oh man, the absolute worst sinking feeling.
It is. You try the backup server, it's totally locked, and then the ransom note pops up on your screen.
Let me guess, demanding an outrageous amount of money.
$4.5 million just to decrypt your operational data.
It's devastating.
And in 2025 alone, that exact nightmare scenario spiked by a massive 34% across California.
That is a staggering jump in just one year.
It really is.
Yeah.
Welcome to the deep dive. You are here because you know corporate data risk is, well, it's no longer just a theoretical white paper problem, right?
Right, it is an active daily threat.
Yeah. And you are trying to figure out how to mathematically prove to your clients that their data is actually safe with you. So today we are tearing into a critical, newly released document from Technigian. It's called the SOC2 Compliance Guide for Orange County Businesses.
And it is a vital document, honestly. It really functions as a blueprint for surviving the current B2B landscape.
For sure.
The guide anchors itself in Orange County, specifically calling out the healthcare tech corridors in Irvine and the wealth managers operating down in Newport Beach. But the mechanisms it describes are absolutely universal.
Right, doesn't matter where you are.
Exactly. If your organization operates in the cloud in any capacity, this applies to you. The central thesis is incredibly blunt, really.
Which is?
If you handle customer data, like financials, health records, basic credentials, having a structured compliance framework like SOC2 is no longer just a nice-to-have marketing badge.
Right.
It is a strict, unavoidable demand from clients, cyber insurers, and regulators alike.
Okay, let's unpack this because looking at the reality on the ground today, April 13th, 2026, the demand is being driven by the sheer scale of the damage out there.
Absolutely.
When you look at that 34% increase in California data breaches, the most alarming takeaway isn't really the aggregate number, it is the specific target profile.
Right, who they are actually going after.
Yeah. These threat actors aren't necessarily wasting their time launching complex heists against massive tech behemoths anymore. They are deliberately hunting mid-sized businesses.
And the reasoning behind that shift is purely economic, you know? Hackers deploy these automated scripts to constantly scan the internet for open ports, unpatched software, weak
Just
passwords.
rattling all the doorknobs.
Exactly. And mid-sized companies are their absolute sweet spot. Think about their profile. They hold incredibly valuable payloads, proprietary software code, client financials, highly sensitive health records.
But they frequently just haven't operationalized their security.
Precisely. They have the data payload of a Fortune 500 company, but they are trying to protect it with the defense budget and, frankly, the ad hoc infrastructure of a local startup.
I mean, they are the forgotten middle child of cybersecurity.
That is a perfect way to put it.
They are essentially walking around a bad neighborhood with $1 million in a paper bag. But let's break down the actual financial fallout, because the guide calculates the average cost of a breach for these mid-sized Orange County businesses at over $4.5 million.
Yeah, it's a massive number.
I really want to understand the underlying mechanics of that number, because an organization doesn't just, cut a single check to a hacker and move on.
Oh, not at all. The ransom payment itself might actually be the smallest variable in the entire equation, assuming you even choose to pay it, which is another issue entirely.
Right.
That $4.5 million represents a devastating multi-layered compound fracture to a business. The first immediate hit is technical remediation.
Like fixing the servers.
Much more than that, you have to bring in elite third-party forensic investigators. They have to dissect your entire network architecture to identify the initial point of compromise. Yeah, and then they have to rebuild your servers from the ground up
Yeah.
and monitor the environment continuously. That technical response alone easily runs into the high six figures.
And while the IT engineers are frantically trying to rebuild the servers, the legal teams are getting involved, right?
Yeah.
Which introduces a totally different vector of financial pain.
Precisely. The second layer of that $4.5 million is legal liability. The clients whose data you exposed are inevitably going to file lawsuits claiming gross negligence.
Naturally.
And right behind the class action litigators are the state and federal regulators. Agencies will level massive punitive fines for failing to protect consumer data under strict frameworks, like the CCPA here in California.
But I'd argue the most lethal financial hit is actually the silent one, right? The reputational destruction.
No, without doubt.
If a mid-sized SaaS company loses its clients' data, the existing clients churn immediately. they are gone.
Overnight.
And landing new enterprise clients becomes virtually impossible because modern procurement departments heavily scrutinize vendor news. I mean, the total collapse of future revenue pipelines is often what actually bankrupts the company, long after the compromised servers are wiped and fixed.
That is the harsh reality.
Hmm.
The cost of a breach isn't just a penalty, it is an existential threat.
So seeing that $4.5 million price tag isn't enough, right? A business actually needs a verifiable way to prove to prospects and insurers that they have the architecture to prevent that loss.
Exactly.
And that requirement for objective third-party proof is exactly what birthed SOC2. But we really need to clarify what this framework actually is, because the origin story feels, I don't know, a bit counterintuitive for a tech standard.
It definitely does. SOC2 stands for System and Organization Controls 2. It is the dominant voluntary compliance framework for cloud service providers.
Okay.
But here is the twist. It wasn't developed by a cybersecurity consortium or, you know, the NSA. It was created by the AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
Wait, hold on. I have to push back on this.
Sure.
If I'm not running a hospital, I don't need Heath Apria, right? If I'm building a cloud infrastructure platform, or I'm running a digital marketing agency handling API integrations, why on earth am I answering to an accounting institute? That feels completely disconnected, like having a plumber come out to inspect my electrical wiring.
I get that a lot, but if we connect this to the bigger picture, it actually makes perfect sense.
Okay, I'm listening.
Think about the fundamental role of an accountant in the business ecosystem. Their entire job is to audit, verify, and establish absolute objective trust in financial reporting.
Right, making sure the numbers are real.
Exactly. Decades ago, if an auditor signed off on a balance sheet, investors knew they could implicitly trust that company's health. But as business rapidly moved from filing cabinets to the cloud, the physical assets just disappeared.
They became data.
Right. And the market realized that verifying the integrity of the underlying data systems was just as critical to a company's viability as verifying the actual cash in the bank. So the AICPA simply took their incredibly rigorous auditing methodology and mapped it directly onto digital infrastructure.
Oh, I see. So they aren't dictating exactly which brand of firewall you have to buy, right?
Not at all.
They are just providing the strict audit structure to prove your firewall actually functions the way you promised your clients it would?
Exactly. They provide the methodology for proof. And they measure that proof across five specific categories, which are known as the trust service criteria.
The guide breaks these down, and I really want to look at how they interlock, because understanding the causality between them is kind of the key to grasping the whole framework.
Let's do it.
The foundational layer, obviously, is security. This is your perimeter defense. Do you have the access controls, the intrusion detection algorithms, and the multi-factor authentication to stop unauthorized threat actors from breaching the environment?
Right. Security establishes the absolute baseline of the vault. But keeping unauthorized people out doesn't matter if your actual authorized clients can't utilize the system to run their business.
That makes total sense.
And that operational necessity drives the second criterion, which is availability.
And availability isn't just like running a basic ping test to see if the homepage loads, right? I mean, I can track my own server uptime. Why do I need an auditor for that?
Because it is about guaranteeing operational resilience at scale. If you promise an enterprise client 99.9% uptime in a service level agreement, an auditor wants to see the mathematical proof of your server redundancy architecture.
They want to see the backup plans.
Exactly. They want to verify your failover protocols. If a massive data center goes offline in Northern California, they need evidence that your application automatically spins up in a secondary region without dropping a single client workflow. They're basically auditing your disaster survival mechanisms.
Which raises a really fascinating technical problem. Let's say the system is perfectly secure from hackers, and it's highly available, the servers are humming along seamlessly.
Okay.
But what if a glitch in your code base is silently duplicating financial transactions, or maybe dropping critical decimals in a data set? The server is technically up, but the data is completely wrong.
And that exact blind spot is why the third criterion is processing integrity. It demands proof that your system performs its intended functions completely, accurately, and without accidental corruption.
Got it.
So if a wealth management platform in Newport Beach executes a complex portfolio rebalancing algorithm, the auditor requires historical evidence that the inputs consistently match the expected outputs without deviation. Your quality assurance protocols and your continuous testing pipelines are heavily scrutinized here.
So processing integrity ensures the machine itself isn't corrupting the data. But what about the internal humans? That introduces a totally different vector of insider risk, which naturally brings us to the fourth criterion, confidentiality.
Yes. Confidentiality focuses heavily on restricting data access internally based on role. Think about a legal practice managing highly sensitive M&A documents or a tech firm guarding proprietary source code.
Stuff you don't want getting out.
Right. The auditor is going to dissect your internal permission architecture. Does a junior marketing hire have administrative access to the CTO's architectural diagrams?
I would hope not.
They shouldn't. You have to prove you employ the principle of least privilege, meaning data is strictly walled off and encrypted so that only the specific personnel who absolutely require it for their job can actually see it.
Now, the final criterion is privacy. And we should be incredibly precise here because it is very easy to conflate confidentiality and privacy. But in the context of SOC2, they govern two completely different data sets, don't they?
It is a critical distinction. Confidentiality applies to broad B2B business data like business plans, algorithms, or pricing models. Privacy is strictly concerned with personally identifiable information, or PII.
Okay, so like end user name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Names, physical addresses, social security numbers, and health markers. Privacy controls demand that you manage this data exactly in accordance with your outward-facing privacy policies.
So if your website tells consumers you automatically delete their data after 30 days,
the auditor is going to dig directly into your database architecture to verify those automated deletion scripts are actually firing without fail on day 31.
Okay, so we have the architecture of trust security, availability, processing integrity, confidentiality, and privacy. The logic of the framework is completely sound.
It is.
But knowing the framework and actually proving you adhere to it to a third party are two very different operational realities. The Technegean Guide explains that the method of proof comes in two distinct forms, SOC2 Type 1 and SOC2 Type 2.
Correct. And really understanding the difference between them is vital for allocating resources. A Type I audit is a point-in-time snapshot. An auditor looks at your digital systems on a single specific day and evaluates whether your security controls are designed properly to meet the criteria.
Let me try an analogy here to see if the mechanics of this are clear. Getting a Type I certification is basically like showing an auditor your brand new gym membership card and handing them your perfectly structured, color-coded workout plan.
I love that. Yes.
You are proving that, theoretically on paper, you have the right equipment and the right strategy to get fit.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it. You are proving the theoretical capability of your design. The guide notes, a Type I audit can typically be completed in 4 to 8 weeks, making it an excellent starting milestone.
But it's just the start.
Right, because Type 2 is the actual proving ground. A Type 2 audit doesn't look at a single day. It evaluates your entire infrastructure continuously over a 6 to 12 month period.
So in our analogy, if Type I is showing them the workout plan, Type 2 is the auditor actually sitting on the bench watching you sweat at the gym every single day for 6 straight months to mathematically prove you are executing the routine.
Exactly. They want to see the operational sweat. They want to see what happens when an employee is abruptly terminated. Do their network access rights get revoked within minutes every single time, consistently over that 6-month window?
That is intense.
It is. Because of that intense operational rigor, the guide outlines a very specific strategic path. Most mid-sized businesses should secure their Type U pass quickly to establish a baseline, but they must immediately transition to a Type 2 audit within 12 months.
And they have to make that transition because enterprise procurement teams aren't naive.
Not at all.
If I am a massive hospital network looking to buy cloud software from an Irvine health tech startup, I don't care that they had a solid security plan on a random Tuesday in April. I demand the Type 2 report because I need historical proof that their security culture is actively operating year-round before I migrate my patient data to their servers.
That is exactly how B2B trust functions today. The enterprise supply chain is deeply interconnected, so massive clients literally force their mid-sized vendors to prove continuous compliance.
But having an auditor theoretically watch you sweat for 6 months sounds like an absolute logistical nightmare for a lean IT team. How does a normal company actually climb this mountain without totally burning out their internal engineers?
It's a challenge.
The guide maps out a 5-step journey to get there, and I want to walk through the actual mechanics of these steps.
Sure. Step one is the GAT assessment. This is the brutal mirror. Before you alter a single server configuration, you bring in an external team, like the engineers at Technegean, to meticulously cross-reference your current infrastructure against the SOC2 requirements.
They are hunting for the blind spots.
Exactly. Do you have unsecured storage buckets in your AWS environment? Are there legacy applications running without multi-factor authentication?
And once you map out those vulnerabilities, you move to step two, which is remediation planning. This is where you actually build the physical defenses.
Right. You roll up your sleeves.
The guide focuses heavily on deploying MFA across all endpoints, configuring extensive audit logging so you have visibility into network traffic, and formalizing your incident response policies. You are structurally patching the holes.
Right. But step three is where most lean businesses hit a massive operational bottleneck, and that is evidence collection. Because SOC2 auditors don't just take your word for it.
They want the receipts.
Always. They require verifiable technical proof for every single control. If you claim that all third-party vendors undergo annual security reviews, you have to historically produce the documentation for every single vendor you utilize.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if a small IT team has to manually take screenshots of firewall configurations, hunt down access logs, and compile PDFs of vendor assessments every single week,
it's completely unsustainable.
Yeah. They aren't going to have time to actually build their company's core product. They are going to drown in administrative compliance paperwork. So how does a business survive the evidence collection phase?
You simply don't do it manually. This is where the guide introduces the critical advantage of utilizing a managed IT partner like Technigen. They deploy pre-configured compliance automation tooling that completely transforms the operational reality.
What kind of tooling are we talking about? How does it actually function under the hood?
The cornerstone of this automation is typically a SIEM, a Security Information and Event Management System. Instead of human engineers manually checking server logs, the SIEM automatically ingests data streams from your firewalls, your cloud environments, and your employee endpoints in real time.
Wow, okay.
And it mathematically correlates events. For instance, if an employee's credentials are used to log in from Irvine, California, and then 12 minutes later, those exact same credentials attempt to download a massive database from an IP address in Eastern Europe.
That's a red flag.
Huge red flag. The SIEM detects the physical impossibility of that travel time, immediately blocks the action, and automatically logs the entire forensic event for the auditor.
So Technigen is essentially automating the treadmill in our gym analogy. They are instrumenting the network to continuously generate its own proof.
Precisely. They provide the 24/7 access security monitoring, and they format the automated evidence so it speaks the exact language the CPA auditors require, which makes step four, the independent audit, incredibly seamless.
Because the data is already there.
Yes. You formally engage the licensed CPA firm, and instead of scrambling for weeks to find old PDFs, your managed partner simply provides the auditor with a pristine, continuously updated dashboard of operational evidence.
And that flows naturally right into step five, ongoing compliance, because the digital threat landscape shifts daily, right? A new zero-day vulnerability drops, or your dev team launches a massive new product feature.
It never stops.
Continuous monitoring ensures you stay in a state of permanent audit readiness, rather than treating compliance as a frantic, exhausting annual fire drill.
It embeds security into the culture, rather than treating it as a one-off event.
All right, so automating the process solves the bandwidth problem for your internal engineers. But we have to confront the financial reality. The guide doesn't hide the ball on this. What does engaging in this rigorous process actually cost a business?
The guide is refreshingly transparent on the economics, actually. A typical SOC2 certification journey ranges from $15,000 to $60,000.
That is a wide range.
It is. That massive variance depends entirely on the architectural complexity of your data environment, the number of employees you have, and how many of those five trust service criteria you choose to bring into the scope of the audit. Now, a partner like Technigen offers flat rate managed compliance packages to remove the unpredictable billing, but it is undeniably a significant upfront investment.
So what does this all mean? Writing a check for maybe $40,000 isn't a trivial decision for any mid-sized company.
Not at all.
But we have to weigh that upfront investment against the sheer economic gravity of doing nothing. We already mapped out the $4.5 million crater of a data breach, but the guide makes a highly compelling case that even if your company is incredibly lucky and never gets hacked, the cost of waiting to get compliant is still financially devastating.
The opportunity cost of waiting is massive.
Mm.
First, look at revenue generation. If you are a B2B software company, enterprise procurement departments will simply drop you from the vendor list at the initial screening phase if you don't have a SOC2 Type 2 report.
They won't even talk to you?
You won't even get an opportunity to pitch your product to the decision makers. Second, Look at operational costs, specifically cyber insurance. The insurance market has hardened aggressively over the last 2 years. Underwriters use SOC2 as a proxy for risk maturity.
So if you don't have it?
If you lack formal frameworks, insurers will either hike your premiums astronomically, or they will flat out deny you coverage, deeming you an uninsurable risk.
You essentially become uninsurable and unsellable. That is a brutal combination for growth. And the guide specifically targets a few key Orange County industries that are most exposed to this dynamic, right?
Yes, heavily regulated ones.
You have healthcare tech and digital health platforms, which are scaling rapidly, financial services and wealth management firms who hold incredibly sensitive economic data, legal practices managing high-stakes corporate litigation files, SaaS startups trying to land those enterprise whales, and real estate tech companies processing massive property transactions.
If you operate in any of those sectors, you are operating on the front lines of data risk. And the guide provides a highly actionable next step for the listener.
Let's hear it.
Orange County businesses can actually secure a complimentary SOC2 readiness assessment. It is a completely risk-free way to find out exactly where your architectural gaps are before you commit a single dollar. You can call Technigian directly at 949-379-8500 or visit technigian.com/0000 or visit technigian.com/compliance to establish that initial baseline.
It is incredibly valuable to take the mystery out of the process. Having laid out the escalating threat landscape, the architectural rigor of the AICPA framework, the strategic roadmap, and the stark economics of trust, it is time to zoom out. What does this paradigm shift mean for our broader understanding of digital commerce?
This raises an important question. How do we actually frame compliance in our own minds? The natural instinct for many leaders is to view SOC2 as a tax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bureaucratic hurdle you just have to clear to play the game.
Right, just checking boxes.
But that mindset fundamentally misunderstands the modern digital economy. We are operating in a profoundly low-trust environment. When you commit to continuous audited security, you aren't just checking a box for an auditor. You are weaponizing trust as a distinct competitive advantage. You're signaling to the market that you are a resilient, mature partner in a sea of vulnerable targets.
Absolutely. And to you listening right now, whether you are an IT director prepping to justify a security budget in your next board meeting, a founder mapping out the infrastructure needed to close your first major enterprise client, or just someone fascinated by the hidden machinery of how the digital world regulates itself, you now have the toolkit. You understand exactly why B2B trust has a $4.5 million consequence, and you know the internal mechanisms of the framework designed to prevent it.
It changes how you see the whole landscape.
It really does.
Yeah.
But I want to leave you with a final provocative thought, something that builds on the underlying logic of everything we have unpacked today. We have established that SOC2 is the gold standard for humans trusting organizations with their data. We rely on these rigorous audits to verify that the software behaves exactly as intended. But look at where the tech industry is rapidly accelerating. Over the next few years, we are going to see autonomous AI agents processing, routing, and making complex decisions with our most sensitive personal information completely independent of human oversight. If an accounting framework was the answer to establishing trust in cloud computing, what is the answer for artificial intelligence? Will we eventually see the birth of a SOC3, a revolutionary new framework designed entirely to audit the continuous decision-making and processing integrity of an AI mind? How do you reliably audit a black box that constantly teaches itself? Something for you to chew on.
Wow, that is a wild thought.
Thank you for joining us as we explore this essential guide. Keep asking the hard questions, keep looking past the jargon, and always stay curious.